Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello and welcome to Season 10 of the Meaning Movement Podcast. If you're watching this, if you're hearing my voice, this is the culmination of a ton of work that my team and I have been doing over the past few months to get ready, to get prepared to 4X our production with this podcast. You may have heard me talk about before how important the Meaning Movement is to me personally and how much I've wanted to see it to go to new places and how I'm kind of just throwing everything at the wall, see what sticks, kind of blowing it up to see what's going to happen. And this episode and this season of the next couple of months of doing two episodes per week is a piece of that process for me. So I'm so excited to be here with you, to be doing this together. So welcome to season 10. Hey everybody, Dan here. Welcome back. My guest today is David Hutchins. His work centers on storytelling for leaders and businesses. If you've been around my work long enough via the podcast, or if you're on my email list, you get invites to the free trainings that I do every month, which you should get on the email list. If you're not, you can get on it at themeaningmovement.com. You'll know how important storytelling and the concept of story is to finding work that is in alignment with who you are, with finding fulfillment, satisfaction in your life. It's a big part of my framework for how I think about these things. So it was really fun to talk about David and his framework and how he thinks about story. He likes to package stories into these different categories, as you'll hear him do as we have our conversation here together. We talk about his transition to calling himself a storyteller, as well as some tips and tricks that he offers for getting people started in telling their stories into using a narrative format. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation. This, of course, is the Meaning Movement Podcast. It's a show about work worth doing. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland, today with guest David Hutchins. Stay with us. This episode, like all episodes of the Meaning Movement Podcast, is made possible by the Calling Course. I just want to say, what do I mean by that when I say made possible? It sounds like something that they say in Sesame Street at the beginning or the end. My kids love Sesame Street. What I mean by that is this is a bootstrapped project. I have a course called the Calling Course. It's what I consider the cornerstone or flagship offering of the Meaning Movement. That course is all about work, all about purpose, all about navigating this space of these questions of who am I? What is my life about? Where am I going? What's my contribution going to be? Whether that's right now, in the future, whatever it might be. This podcast has expenses. We pay for those expenses via sales of that Calling Course, also through sponsorships. Share a little bit more about in just a moment. But I wanted to just, instead of talking about the Calling Course here today, wanted to share some words from a recent member of the course. This is Ryan. He sent this over and gave me permission to share this with you. So I'm going to read from him his thoughts on being a part of the Calling Course. He says, "Discovering more of who I am and how that connects to the world in work is an overwhelming process. It can be hard to know where to start and easy to feel stuck. The Meaning Movement has been a great acceleration, affirmation, and help in this to me. The Calling Course specifically offered new perspectives and a deeper invitation into who I am and how I can walk the path to becoming my fullest self, connected to others in a mission through work." I love that so much. "The combination of material, questions, and direct coaching through Q&A is powerful. I recommend it to anyone doing the hard work of walking deeper into their call." First, thank you so much, Ryan, for those words. They are just so fantastic. And I couldn't have said it better myself, which is why I'm reading them here. If you're listening or watching and you want to know more about the Calling Course, the course I open up for enrollment periodically. I don't have a set schedule at this time, but the best way to know when it's going to be the next enrollment period is going to be opening is for you to be on the email list. You can get on the email list anywhere at themeaningmovement.com. You'll find a bunch of subscribe boxes around the site, or go to the calling course, thecallingcourse.com. There is a free mini course. It gives just a small taste of what the calling course is all about. If you join that mini course, you'll be sure to be on the list for our next enrollment. So if any of that sounds exciting and enticing to you, make sure to jump on the email list, and then you'll be notified when that next enrollment period opens. I just want to take a quick moment to talk about sponsorship. I've always said that this podcast, this endeavor is made possible by the Calling Course. What that means is it's self-funded, it's bootstrapped, but we are opening the door to sponsors to come alongside us if they're a good fit for our audience. So if you have a business, a service, or work for someone who does that would like to get in front of an audience like ours, shoot us an email at podcast@themeaningmovement.com. We can tell you more about what we have to offer by way of our audience and sponsorship opportunities, and we can take the conversation from there. podcast@themeaningmovement.com. Thanks so much. David, welcome to the Meaning Movement Podcast. I'm so excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you, Dan. I am a fan and I am delighted to be here.
I love it. I love it. The question I like to start with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do in the world?
So it's funny. I was talking to my 86-year-old mother last week, and she said, "I still don't know what to tell people when they ask me what you do for a living." And I'm like, "Mom, I've written books about it. All you have to do is read one of the books." So what is it that I do for a living? Mom, if you're listening, my role is to go around the world and help leaders and organizations tell stories. And they're telling stories about who they are and what they do and why they do it. And so simply, that's what my work is.
I love it. I love it. Why, and we'll get in, I want to get all into your backstory, but let's just ask this one question that will tease, you know, what's to come. Why is that important? Why do organizations and leaders need to tell stories?
It's a simple idea. And as you certainly know, Dan, that when we tell stories, when people use this language that is narrative, something different happens. There's a different kind of connection that happens when people start telling stories, and it's powerful. And if you're a leader in an organization and you're tasked with moving the work forward or to bringing the vision forward, we want that. This connection that happens, we can bring that into more parts of the work that we do as leaders. And so the work that I do most often, it's a day-long learning experience where we're building skills of strategically selecting certain kinds of stories and then connecting them to the work that we care about so that we can create engagement and belief.
I love it. We're going to get deeper into all of that. But just to rewind a little bit, how did you get into this very specific unique, but that's not right. What I'm trying to say is like mother confusing kind of work, right? The kind of work that's hard is ethereal. Is that the right word? I don't know. It's like, you know, how did you get into such a great niche?
It's funny. A lot of people ask me that because it's a sweet gig, man. Flying around the world and hearing inspiring leaders tell emotional stories. So how did I get into it? You know, part of my interest in this work is the strategic piece of it. And I talk about different types of stories. Leaders should be selecting certain kinds of stories intentionally and connecting them to outcomes. And one really powerful personal story that leaders have is the origin story. It's a great identity story, especially for people who are thinking about meaning. So you're asking me for one of the origin stories. I have a lot of them. Yeah. So here's one. Here's one of what brought me into this work. So I actually grew up in New Orleans in Louisiana, and my family were members of this small conservative church. It was a fundamentalist church, very conservative. And it was the central organizing aspect of our lives. I mean, we went there multiple times a week. The people in this church were the people we had dinner with. It was like everything centered around it. And it was a church that hurt people. Mm. And as a kid, you know, these are the most important people in my world. I love them. And so I kept having this experience of, why are people getting hurt here? If you're a member of this church and you get divorced, you're going to have a really painful experience in this community. If you're a woman who has skills for leadership, you're going to get hurt in this system. I remember one year a man committed suicide. We found out later he was gay. And I remember how silent everybody was. Nobody talked about this. And I remember thinking, did we have something to do with this? And so as a kid, you don't have language for this, right? All I know is I felt this disconnection. And so I carried that with me for a really long time. And so it set me on this path of inquiry of, you know, I knew these people who I love did not, most of them I don't think, wanted to hurt people. But when we came together, we did things that were hurtful. What is that? What is happening when people come together collectively and they start behaving in ways that might be different than how they would behave separately? And so that brought me into organizational work. And my career has been looking at rewards systems, which I did not enjoy that very much. And then it brought me into the work of organizational learning. If you've read Peter Senge and systems theory, and that started getting me closer to the answers. Ultimately, where I've landed is on this topic of story. And what are the stories we're telling ourselves about ourselves? And could we get different results simply by telling different stories? And so that's the work that I do now.
I love that. So just to kind of add another dimension to that, like how does all that journey translate to like the day in, day out of work? Like, were you in organizational, like HR? Were you like, what are some of the stopping points along the way before, you know, before getting into launching your own thing?
Okay. So perfect question. Because one of the other story types that I want to share today, which is a great identity, meaning-making story that entrepreneurs might be thinking about, including you, Dan. It's a story that I call the leap. And the idea is that especially, you know, we're in this age of entrepreneurship where lots of people are stepping into things that are new. Well, that's a great story to tell. And the way you tell that story, it's not, oh, I'm doing this new thing and I just got here and I'm trying to figure it out. And there's lots of people who've been doing this longer than me. It's not that. It's, I come from this other world and I bring with me something that makes me different. I bring a gift into this work that I'm doing now. So my work now, to answer your question, is organizational learning. You know, I've been working with Coca-Cola and IBM and Google to create leadership development. I actually began my career in advertising. So for the first few years of my career, I was a copywriter. I worked at big advertising agencies in Dallas, Texas, and in Atlanta, Georgia. And I loved the creative process and that story-driven work also, right? I learned early in my career, if I tell a story, people will buy more Coca-Cola. Yeah. After a couple years of doing that, I started getting frustrated because I was spending 60 hours a week writing about hamburgers. You know, I was writing about stuff I didn't care about. And I knew I wanted to write about leadership and innovation and teams. So I quit my job at the ad agency. I actually went to different HR training industries and all I had was my advertising portfolio. So, you know, like on the big expo floor, they have all the training companies with booths. I went from booth to booth showing people my advertising portfolio. I was naive. I was like 24 years old. I showed people my ads and said, could you use this kind of thinking in the learning work that you do? And so that's kind of the journey that brought me into organizational learning. I still kind of think of myself as an ad guy. Now, instead of selling Coca-Cola, I help ideas move through organizations.
I love it. And then when you left that marketing role, did you join another organizational learning company or did you decide, at what point did you go out on your own?
1994 was the year.
Yeah.
I have been on my own for 25 years now or more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, 25 years. Does that add up? That doesn't. I'm trying to do the math here. That would be.
Don't call me out of my math.
That'd be 28. 20, it's more. You got to give yourself some more credit. You've been at this a long time.
Decades. Viewers who are watching can see a little bit of the gray hair there.
Exactly. Don't mean to call you out on your math. But yeah, so you did some time with some other companies before stepping out and launching your own.
Yeah, with advertising agencies, but since then, literally for the past three decades, I've partnered with organizations never internally. So I did a lot of work with Coca-Cola in communications work. I wrote some of their annual reports. I was a speechwriter for their CEO. IBM, I did team development work that ended up going all around the world for IBM. So communications and organizational learning. With a foundation of storytelling has always been a part of my career.
That's great. And did you feel like your love for storytelling, did it, like, what was the genesis of that? I mean, you told us a little bit about your church experience, but like, when did story as a category, as a lens for the world, like, emerge in your, you know, in your story?
It was a dawning awareness because it truly was the common element to all of the work that I was doing, from advertising to organizational learning. Where I really started to notice it was in the late 1990s. I was doing some work with Coca-Cola, and they were on this journey, this transformation journey, to become what is known as a learning organization. And if you've read Peter Senge in The Fifth Discipline, you know, it was a best-selling book in the 1990s. It was like a bestseller for 10 years. And it's all these arts and practices of what does it look like to learn together. And so Coca-Cola was investing, bringing the entire system into this journey of organizational learning. And early in their work, they came up against a problem, which was nobody at Coke understood what they were talking about. Like, some people can read the fifth discipline and they love the systems thinking stuff. Most people found it impossible to access. And so as a communications guy, they asked me, could you create a solution that helps people at Coke understand what we mean when we say we're becoming a learning organization? And so I wrote this silly story about a flock of sheep that outwits a pack of hungry wolves. And in the process, they display the characteristics of a learning organization. And I had a buddy who was a children's book illustrator, Bobby. And I said, hey, Bobby, I need you to do me a favor. Draw me some really crazy illustrations of some sheep and some wolves. And I called this manuscript Outlearning the Wolves.
Yeah.
And Coke ended up not buying it, but I brought it to a publisher. And Outlearning the Wolves is now like in 12 different languages. It went
around
the world. It keeps selling. It's like 250,000 copies and all these different. And I still get calls from people who are putting on Outlearning the Wolves puppet shows as a way of creating this conversation. So, Dan, that was probably the moment where I really entered this inquiry around storytelling, where I said, all right, why did that work? I wasn't trying to write a hit book. I was trying to solve a problem for my client.
Why did it take off?
And that brought me really deep into the story conversation.
I love it. It feels like you knew it at some level in your bones, right? Like you had the intuition to frame it in that way, and then that kind of brought it into the forefront. And so then, let's dig into your expertise a little bit here, because I'm curious for listeners that maybe less familiar with story. What are we talking about when we talk about story?
I bet your listeners all have an answer to that. If I were to say to your listeners, what is a story? One thing a lot of people say is, well, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have a friend who says, well, when I went in to my proctologist for my colonoscopy, that had a middle, beginning, and end also, and I don't recommend it. But yeah, as a beginning, middle, and
that's not a story we want to tell right now. I love it.
A story is about people and the things that happen to people. And mm-hmm. that sounds really simple, but I'm working with a lot of technology leaders who are, you know, they've got these slide decks with data all over them, and they're bringing those forward to their marketplace, and they're not getting the engagement they want. And I'm saying to them, and their markets are saying, show me who you are. You know, let us see more of you. Mm. Put you in the message. Mm. And some mm-hmm. of my really smart technology leaders really struggle with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Well, I know that, you know, from a psychological perspective, story literally is who you are. If you try to find, you know, dissect a person to try to find their identity, the closest thing that you can get is a story that they tell themselves, a story that we repeat, that we assign meaning to. As humans, we're meaning-making machines. And so identity, like really, you could say human beings at our very core, the way we understand ourselves is through that lens. It is literally like we are stories. Right. I think it's a great
identity answer. Is nothing but stories. It's funny because when I work with leaders, everybody says the same thing. Everybody says, oh, I can't think of any stories. Everybody says that. I can't think of any stories, which is, I love it when people say that because it's so easily disprovable. It's not that you can't think of any stories. It's that you have so many. Your brain is nothing but stories overlapping other stories. When you go to sleep tonight, your brain's going to keep telling stories because it can't stop. So it's not that you can't think of any, it's that we don't know which ones to isolate. And so that's a lot of my work is helping people identify the stories they should be.
What I imagine some of that too is like believing that our stories are worth sharing. Right? I feel like that's where I go with that. When someone says that they don't have any stories to tell, it's not that they don't have any stories. It's just that they don't think that their stories are worth being heard or worth repeating, or at least don't belong in the context in which you're asking them to share them.
The biggest part of the work that I do is helping leaders work through fear. Mm. And you're right. It's fear. You just described fear. You know, and it's part of this technology that is story, because when I tell you a story, I just told you a couple vulnerable stories. I felt a little weird. You know, there's still a part of me that's going, ooh, I hope this is okay. You know, I have some shame around the church stuff. Ooh, I hope Dan doesn't judge. Right. I still encounter that. So that is a feature of this technology that is story, because the reason my scientists don't want to tell stories is if they're just showing data, now I've, you know, just vomit up everything you know on a slide. Now I get to show you how smart I am without actually revealing myself.
Yes. You know?
And so to take that next step and show who we are in this age where we're being called to more humanized leadership, and story is the fastest path to that, I think.
I love that. I love that. Well, I think that's one of the questions I want to ask. I think you're getting to it. Is like, what is the, like, it's story can feel, I think I tried to use it. I keep trying to find that word, ethereal, but it's not really quite the word, but it's like so hard to like grasp and put your finger on. And so when you're engaging with leaders and with organizations, what is the pain point that leads them to engage with someone like you around building, about story building? Because it's not like they wake up one day and they're like, hey, we need better storytelling around here. And so I guess the other way to ask this question is like, what is the result? What is the end of this journey that you take people on look like for organizations?
So when we talk about outcomes, why should leaders be telling stories? There's a lot of reasons to do it. The most common pain points that I'm hearing from my clients, one is disengagement. You know, it's not that they don't know, it's that they don't care. Well, story is the language of creating that engagement. People are more likely to care and believe when we tell stories. So disengagement. Another is we're not being heard. Mm. And when we tell stories, the stories are particularly good at punching through the noise. We're in this noisy world where mind share is an increasingly precious resource that's harder and harder to get. And story is especially good at getting that mind share. It's great for selling, right? Again, I learned that early in my career. When I tell stories, people buy Coca-Cola. So salespeople want this. Culture and belonging work. Everybody's talking about employee experience right now. You know, talented young people are leaving. What are the stories we're creating to have the culture in the meaning that they believe in that will make them want to stay. Another outcome is simply connection. You know, we've come through this COVID experience. A lot of people are saying, you know what, I've hired an entire team over the past 2 years, and we've only seen each other on Zoom, and now we're going to be in the room together for the first time. What a great opportunity to tell stories, to take a team that's been fractured and isolated and reconnect them in a deeply human way. So there's a lot of outcomes to this.
I love it. I love it. Well, as people are listening, they might be thinking, you know, how does this apply to me? You know, they're in a place where they're looking for some, maybe they're looking at making some sort of career change. Maybe they're just looking for more meaning, more purpose in their own work. You know, they're not organizations. They may or may not be leaders, but I know that there's, you know, from my own work with people, we do a lot of story work. That's a big part of the vocational process that I'm always inviting people to, that vocation is a journey of identity and identity formation. And that's, because like we already talked about, identity is story. But I'd be curious to hear some of how you would speak to these folks and say, here are some things you should be thinking about in how you tell your story and things that you can do even right now to help get clarity on where you're going and what you want to do with your life.
Sure. Well, first I want to comment on leaders, which is my audience, but I think that's your audience too. I use that term leadership pretty broadly. If your listeners are pointing to the future and saying, let's go this way, they're leaders. Mm. That's leadership.
That's a great point. It's a great point.
And they should be telling stories about that. And I work with a lot of entrepreneurs for individual storytelling as well. And I start with selection. You know, a lot of people talk about how to tell a good story and emotional content and protagonist and a conflict and all. And that's great stuff. I have those conversations too. But first, I start with selection. Which story should you be telling? One of the resources that I use with people is this. Everybody loves this one. This is the Leadership Story Deck. For your listeners, on the video, I'm holding up a box that is this product. And it's a deck of cards. It's dozens of cards of ideas of story types that you could be telling, including innovation stories, sales stories, but they're also personal stories as well. I've already shared a couple types with you, right? One is the origin story. I call it a leader with conviction. There's something that brings me to this work. Then there's another one I showed you, which is the leap. I used to be in this world, and now I'm in this world, and I bring something with me that makes me special and different. Here's another one that your listeners might be thinking about, and that is the values story. The values story. There are some things that I care about. There are some things I believe that I'm not going to compromise, that make me different. When you work with me and partner with me, you're going to feel and see those things. And it's going to make me working with me different from working with the other people. So here's an example of one. And this one's kind of interesting. This one's recent. I just told this story a couple weeks ago. I originally put it on my Instagram page. And then I thought, I wonder what would happen if I put this personal, vulnerable story on LinkedIn. Other than LinkedIn, I haven't shared this publicly. So I'm going to test this with you and with your audience.
Yeah, let's do it.
I printed it out because I know I don't think I can do a screen share on Zencastr. So So on LinkedIn, there's the photo. There's a photo of me. This is in my childhood bedroom where I grew up. And there's a mural of the Beatles on the wall. And if you're a Beatles fan, if you know Yellow Submarine, it's the front cover of the Yellow Submarine album. I painted this as a giant mural of my wall. And so there's a picture of the adult me sitting underneath this mural. And here is, I closed the page. So I'm going to pull this page up again. Here's the story that I told on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Dan, I don't know if you do editing. This might be where you want to cut out 5 seconds. Yep. Here it is. Found it. Okay, maybe you don't have to cut out anything. All right, so here's how I put this personal story on LinkedIn, right, with this photo.
Yep.
I said, Mom, Dad, I want to paint the Beatles on the wall of my bedroom. This was in 1982, and I was 14 years old. They said, okay. They didn't even pause during dinner. They just said, don't get paint on the carpet. They always said yes and celebrated my weird ideas. They believed. I loved them for that, and it gave me my career. It's a gift that I was intentional about bringing forward to my own kids. So I went with Yellow Submarine because, well, it's easy. Flat colors and two dimensions. Revolver would have been way too hard. When Hurricane Katrina ripped our house apart in 2005, this is in New Orleans, the wall with the Beatles stayed dry. It was a miracle and proof that God loves the Beatles. Mom and Dad rebuilt the entire house around that wall. Wow. 40 years later, John, Paul, George, and Ringo are still there. Earlier this year, we moved Mom out of the house. Since Dad died last summer, she just hasn't been able to take care of herself. Last week, we moved all the furniture out. Mom asked me if I wanted any of the furniture, but I said, no, I don't need anything. I have the stories, and that's enough. It was so weird walking through the empty house. I could hear echoes of kids laughing. I could hear shouts of war and I shot you, you're dead, in the backyard. But mostly, I heard the Beatles. I am the Walrus. Good day, sunshine. Ringo's solo in the Abbey Road Side 2 medley. I don't know what the new owners will do with the Beatles mural. Probably paint over it. Why wouldn't they? They don't have the story. I stopped by my room last to say goodbye to the boys. I raised my hand and returned the love sign to John Lennon. Goodbye, I said. Thank you. Love is all you need.
So that's beautiful.
It. Well, thank you.
I love it.
I posted that on LinkedIn and I thought that I wonder if this is weird because it wasn't a business story.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't talk about my offerings. I'm demonstrating storytelling, but I'm not pitching.
Yep.
And remember, we're talking about punching through the noise. Here's what's interesting about this post. I'm going to hold up the screenshot again.
Yep.
If you look, where is it?
It's a little bit fuzzy on my side. So you'll have to just narrate it for us.
18,000 going on 19,000 views of that post.
Wow.
Which for me is a lot. I don't know what other
That's
people
a lot.
Get. I never get that.
A lot more than I get.
Yeah. When I post stuff, I usually get 100 views, 120.
Yeah. You know?
Going on 19,000 views.
Wild. That.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even
what
better.
What do you think of that? Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Continue. Well, yeah.
No. What do I make of it is the better question.
Yeah.
I like that better than where I was going. Mm-hmm. What do I make of it? I think it's a subject that you could speak to beautifully, which is a hunger for meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that LinkedIn is a pretty sterile kind of environment.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And this is the first time I've presented something with vulnerability, with emotion. Mm-hmm. Where I allowed people to see more of who I am. And the reward is 18,000 views.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so as we're talking about this humanization of the organizational world, I go back to my original statement, show us who you are. Let us see more of you. And not just a value statement on your website. Don't just say, I believe in entrepreneurship. Tell us the story that breathe life into those beliefs. With the living stories that you have.
Yeah. That's so good. That is really, really beautiful, really moving. And I feel like, a good challenge of like how much, like we could be so afraid of telling those really vulnerable stories, afraid of, you know, that people will think it's weird reading something like that on LinkedIn. Or even if they should be shared at all, right? But then to like see, you know, you leading by example, sharing that piece, and then seeing how people respond, I think it's really a real challenge in a really positive way to go and do likewise, right? To share the stories you have to share, and people are hungry for them.
That's the challenge. And, you know, a lot of my work is with European organizations, and this is, Americans struggle with this. I think this is even harder for my European leaders, because they say, oh, this is something Americans do, right? All the emotional stuff is what Americans do. And the French don't do this. But even in that culture, it's changing right now. The European culture, the new generation of talent is coming in and expecting a different kind of more human conversation. They're talking about meaning and all of the things you're talking about, Dan. So there's this huge shift happening right now, not just in the United States, but all around the world.
I love it. I love it. When people, I guess, just to be, I don't know, like, is the invitation, is what you're calling people to just share stories more? Or is there a, like, how do you choose which stories? How do you, I'm going to pull up my LinkedIn and I'm going to say something, right? Like, I mean, clearly that you worked on that piece. Like, that was very well, very beautifully. Yeah, you took us there, but how do you help people think about what are the stories that they should share, and what's maybe too personal or too vulnerable or too traumatic? And do you need to have an end goal in mind as to why you're sharing what you're sharing? How do you think about those kinds of questions?
I think about exactly those questions. And the focus of my work is on the intentionality of this. Because we're already telling stories. If you go, when you sit down for dinner with your family tonight, and they're going to say, hey, what did you do today? I mean, you're going to fall back to this story language. So we're already doing this all the time. And what I'm saying is that as leaders, if you're an entrepreneur or a leader, that we want to focus on outcome. One of the resources, another resource that I use with my groups is this. I'm holding up an image that is the story canvas. It's a large visual framework for after you've selected a story from the story deck and said, okay, here's a story I want to tell. Then we use sticky notes and we build it on the story canvas. And in fact, I'll share this for free with your listeners if they'd like to have a copy. We'll provide a way to reach out at the end. But the last box is the story canvas. There's a place down here at the bottom where it's, and now we know. There's a reason I told you this story. And so at the end of the story, there's an invitation either for people to believe something or feel something or do something. And so that's the strategic and the intentional piece of it. Is identifying the outcome and then making sure, is the story getting me to that outcome?
I love it. I love it. That's so great. It's beautiful work that you're doing. I really love it. Definitely just resonates so much with what I do. And I'm curious how, in all of your work, how do you think about words like whichever words are in your vernacular, calling, purpose, vocation, Which words do you use when you're thinking about what you do, and how do you think about them?
We at our dinner table, we talk about those things openly. My kids are both in their 20s now, but for years we've talked about calling, and my kids just grew up with this expectation that work is not just a means to a paycheck, but it's an expression of who you are. And what's special, what's different about you. And so they know that the journey of life is figuring out how to be more of myself and express that in the work that I do. So this is a huge conversation for us. And it's why I was excited to be on your podcast, because you're hosting this beautiful dialogue around this.
Thank you. That means so much. And I love that lucky kids to grow up in a household that's that's addressing it head on, right? Like, I feel like so often this conversation is just a conversation people have to have navigate on their own or find their way into, which is, why I'm trying to make this resource, why I am building this resource as another way in. So I'm jealous of your kids having that experience.
Do you have young kids or?
I do. I have a 6.5-year-old, a almost 4-year-old, and an almost 2-year-old. So just a few years behind you.
What an opportunity you have to tell stories at the dinner table. I made sure to tell my kids like resilience stories that, you know, the times daddy failed, but it was okay. Yeah. And they love those stories. You know? The times that I felt alone, but I knew I was loved.
Yeah.
You know? Instead of shaking your finger and telling your kids, don't give up. Tell stories about a time you wanted to give up, but you're glad.
I love that.
Right.
I love that. That's such a great invitation. And just in general, like instead of just telling them, don't more often tell them, tell them the stories of why they shouldn't. Right. Like the stories from your own story, which is great. Yeah. That's really fantastic. I love it. If we could put a billboard on the moon that everybody could see, this is this magical universe I'm creating here. Like, what's the message that you'd want the whole world to read? It doesn't have to be a literal billboard. We don't need a billboard on the moon, but I'm just, what's the message that you could send to everyone? If we could send one message to every person in the world.
You win for coolest question. Okay, here's maybe a counterintuitive response, because I'm using this word storytelling. I keep saying telling. It sounds like a one-way transaction, and it's not, because after the story has been told, now the invitation is for us to do the sense-making together. So the billboard says, listen.
Oh, listen. That's good. I love that. Yeah, that speaks to me. I feel it. I feel it in my bones. Thank you for that.
I see the billboard on the moon in my head. It's a beautiful one.
It.
Thank you for that gift. How cool.
That's so great. Well, this has been so fun. I feel like we could go on indefinitely. I geek out on story and love all your expertise and what you're doing with leaders and organizations. If people want to follow along with your work, is there anything specific you'd like to invite people to?
So if you'd like the free resources, I'll send you some of the cards in PDF format as well as the story canvas. Send me an email. I assume you'll put this in the show notes as well, right?
Yeah,
email is david@davidhutchins.com. And you got to spell Hutchins correctly with an E-N-S, not an I-N-S. david@davidhutchins.com. Or just go to my website, storytellingleader.com.
Perfect. I'll make sure to link up those in the show notes so people can just click right on through. Thank you so much, David, for being on the show. This has just been so fun. I look forward to staying connected and watching you out there doing your work.
Thank you for hosting this beautiful and really urgent for our times conversation. You're bringing a great gift forward. So thank you for your work, Dan.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you so much, David, and thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. You can find David's work and everything we talked about in the show on our show notes. If you're not on the email list, as I said at the top of the show, I work with story a lot. I'm always inviting people to dig into their narrative, because that's where you find the clues to what gives you satisfaction, what gives you fulfillment. I do workshops around this. I send out content around this. I'm always creating around these ideas. If you're not on the email list, go to themeaningmovement.com and jump on the list. It's totally free. You can unsubscribe at any time if you don't like the content, and it won't even hurt my feelings. Would love to have you there. Also, if this show, this episode, or any episode of The Meaning Movement has been helpful for you, please share it with someone who might also find it helpful. And if you haven't left a rating or review, take a moment to do so wherever you're listening. If there's an option, it would be incredibly helpful. That's how people like you find this show. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. Our music is by Tom Worum. We'll be back with you very soon.